6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Good morning to the unemployed insomniac in San Francisco who is obsessed with me. Good morning to the bakers of the world. I love the fact I got an email today, Mark Riley. How you doing?
All right. How you doing, man?
I'm all right. You know, I'm not all right.
No, you're
sick.
Not. You're
I'm
sick.
I'm sick. I'm not going to pretend.
There you go.
I hate it. I hate being sick, man.
But you're a trooper.
Yeah, I am, man. I could have left you hanging today.
Thanks. Well, hey, my man Tim is on the board. We'd have done this.
I know. Kalo's out. Kalo took the hit, man. He's got the same thing I do, but he's sleeping in out of concern for the other people. But he's not really sleeping. I think he's with us in spirit on the IM. He's running everything. How you doing, Tim? You all right?
Yeah, I'm doing good.
All right, good.
There you go.
Tim comes in and sits at the board when Kalo, the Costco ho, isn't here. And Tim, not a talkative man, but comes from a family of librarians. Am I right? I can't remember. Right? It's a family of
one librarian.
The mother
is
your mom's a librarian, right? Well, that'll do it. So we get this email. Mark and Mark, I'm the baker from Seattle who came to your show when you were in town. Just wanted to let you know that we're still listening and laughing. Thought you'd like to know that there are many minions of the night who are enjoying your program, from the warehouse guys who load the trucks to the truckers who deliver to us. Also, the salespeople who start bright and early to catch that worm. We're all listening and loving your show and all the others on Air America. Last week when I called my order into the warehouse, I said to the person on the other end, hang on while I turn down my Air America. And they replied, it's on here, too. Our baker is a favorite spot for teachers, and we're converting them, too. It's not hard, since most of the teachers we see are anti-Bush anyways. Well, just wanted to tell you to keep up the good work, because we all love you. And tell my Hawaiian baker cousins, aloha. That Seattle baker.
Yeah.
We got bakers in Hawaii, too. See, I don't know if some people understand that. A lot of times our show goes out into the world in the middle of the night, especially on the West Coast. If they don't carry us in the 6 o'clock hour when we're supposed to be on, sometimes they'll carry us at 3 to 6, and we've got this whole secret world of night people who enjoy listening to us.
I love night people, though, man. I always have. You know, especially in a city like this.
Oh, yeah. I remember when I lived in San Francisco. This is a silly memory. We used to go after I do comedy. There used to be this donut shop. What's that bouncing around? Come on, Tim. What are you doing?
Tim.
He's clunking around on the computer. It's rattling everything. But it's good. It's an interesting sound. It was kind of percussive, and I should have been doing a poetry.
Could you do that again?
Okay. Here we go. So. I used to go to this donut shop. You ever had donuts that come? This was before Krispy Kreme. This is before Krispy Kreme.
Okay.
And you go and they come right out of the oven, like right out of the fat fryer. That was the best.
That's Georgie's. There used to be a place in Harlem on 125th Street. Again, before Krispy Kreme, you go there. It was called Georgie's. You'd go there every afternoon about 2:30, 3 o'clock, and they'd come out of the, and there'd be a line of people waiting to buy these donuts, and they'd all weigh 300 pounds, every last one of them.
They're addicted.
Yes, they're wonderful though. Yeah. I mean, really wonderful. The donuts. It's difficult to describe because Krispy Kreme only copies.
Don't you remember? Yeah, don't remember when things had integrity, authenticity, man, where you had to go and search things out. Not everything. Listen to my anti-free market rambling. Like, I like it when it was just a guy where you had to know the place to get the good thing.
Well, you know, it's funny because in Georgie's case, there was this urban legend that was built up where apparently some corporation wanted to buy them and buy the recipe. But they wanted to substitute margarine for butter, and the people that ran Georgie said, absolutely not. We won't do it. And they killed the deal for that.
Wow. There's a bakery out in Astoria that actually, on its awning, says it's the butter that makes the difference.
Yeah, it does.
The pride of butter. Hey, dude, so I saw Ray yesterday as I was sitting there sweating at home. Sweating this cold flu, whatever the hell it is inside of me, out.
Mm.
I rented Ray. And I got to tell you, a pretty crappy movie. I got to be honest.
I haven't seen it. I really just haven't seen a whole heck of a lot of movies. Those kind of movies, biopics where the star ends up spending time with the subject, which happened, by the way, with Ali and Will Smith, don't always turn out real great because of, obviously, the subject, and of course Ray Charles passed away, but the subject wants a relatively sanitized version of.
Well,
this was interesting.
I mean, there was plenty of sordid stuff. I mean, there was definitely plenty of sordid stuff. It was crappy only in the sense that it gets a little cheesy.
Wasn't compelling.
Well, it was fairly compelling, but what was compelling to me was just stuff I didn't know about Ray Charles. I only know his hits. He was not part of my musical lexicon. I don't have Ray Charles albums. I do know the hits, but just the history of his musical career, I found to be pretty fascinating. And I think Jamie Foxx did a pretty good job in mimicking Ray and acting as Ray. There was a couple of standout performances. I really liked the guys in the band. I mean, there were some good performances. But just the way it was cut and the way it was, these flashbacks, it was just cheesy and a little over the top. But, I mean, it got into the heroin. It got into all that stuff. And also the Ahmet Ertegun, Jerry Wexler.
Wexler, yeah.
Yeah.
Atlantic Records.
Those guys were good. The guys who played them were good. I don't know the cat's name. One of them is on the West Wing. He plays I don't even watch the West Wing. You know, the fat guy with the beard and the bald, but he lost a lot of weight, and now he's in Ray. So, anyways... I don't know if it was an Academy Award-winning performance. I didn't think Jamie Foxx was as good in Ray as he was in Collateral. Personally. It was an interesting movie. They put a lot of money into making into the set design, so you got a sense of the time real well. Which
it was a good period piece. That way.
Yeah, we got to see a lot of stuff.
Now, are you putting your money on Jamie Foxx for Collateral, but not for Ray? I want this on the record.
No, I think that he probably will win for Ray, but I thought as far as a performance goes that he was better in Collateral. Because with Ray Charles, I mean, on some level, it's not a matter of how hard is it to do Ray Charles, but somebody who is that specific in his, sort of behavioral elements. Everything's so familiar. There's just a fine line between an impression and a real performance. How much depth he really brought to Ray Charles, I don't know. I thought it was a little shallow.
Hmm.
Gelman's nodding. Yeah, you with me on that, Gelman?
Yeah. Wayne Gelman says he's down.
Yeah, but there's some things about his musical career that I didn't know. In the movie that really, they put forth the idea that Ray Charles was actually the first guy responsible for integrating gospel into modern music in terms of making sexy songs with a gospel beat and a gospel melody. Is that true? I don't think it's true. I don't know that you'll know. But
it's not entirely true. It's Black History Month, man. I know everything.
Okay, well, let's go with it then.
No, the bottom line you could make the argument, but you'd have a lot of people, particularly in the gospel community, who would argue with you about that. People would argue that Sam Cooke, and his group, the Soul Stirrers, were really more responsible when Sam Cooke broke away and decided to start doing secular music.
Well, the thing about Sam Cooke, though, in my knowledge, I listened to a lot of Sam Cooke when I was younger, because some guy turned me on to all the old R&B guys, and there was a lot of Sam Cooke on there. And he didn't have that rawness that Ray Charles did. I mean, he was a very smooth character.
And they're very smooth, very sophisticated. The thing about Sam Cooke was that he, more than any other black performer of his time, wanted to control the means of production for his own music.
Right.
Something that Ray Charles never really aspired to do. Yeah.
Apparently
until later on, yeah.
When he went to ABC Records, apparently he was able to get control of his masters, be able to produce his own music and do whatever he wanted.
Yeah. Now, the interesting thing about Sam Cooke is that he, when he did A Change Is Gonna Come, which, by the way, took, he sang it right at the time of the height of the Civil Rights Movement protests, and it was a gospel song originally. That changed a lot in terms of the way people perceived it, because he was a very smooth, You Send Me and those kinds of songs
were always
suave. But then Ray Charles, too, was one of the first R&B performers to use, full string orchestras in the background prior to Motown, because Motown did it to an extent as well. But Ray Charles was the guy who really, expanded a lot of that, moved into country music, did a groundbreaking album, a jazz album with Betty Carter, and jazz was not really his strong. He was an R&B guy.
Yeah.
Who
come out of Alabama, I guess, playing some gospel and some country music.
That's what
they sort of really established that. And then when he went to ABC Records was when he did the orchestral
stuff. Yeah. And then there was the Ray Letts and of course the guys in his regular touring band.
Right.
Well, the Ray Letts performed with him for a long, there were like 25 zillion different Ray Letts.
Wow. There's so much I didn't know. Now I'm fascinated and I have to go get obsessively involved and buy all Ray Charles records. records. Yeah, that's what, because that's what I do. Like if I like hear something I never heard before in a different way, like, wow, who's that guy? And they're like, oh, you don't know that guy? That guy's got 50 albums out. Well, now I know what I'll be buying, all 50 of those records, to go through everything they ever did.
I'm looking to maybe get into Serge Gainsbourg now that I made Jared.
Both of us. We're gonna get on
that. Have a Gainsbourg experience.
So I'm sure that people out there listening are saying, what is this, Air America? What are they talking about? Music? Are we on the right channel here? What's going on? Well, guess what? Korea's got a nuclear bomb. It's 16 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
That's the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo!
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. It is Wednesday, right? It is Wednesday? No? Thursday?
No, it's Thursday, man.
Oh, my God.
You got one day left before...
I'm going to fly tomorrow to Los Angeles and then drive on Saturday to the Poway Center of Performing Arts outside of San Diego to do my Jerusalem Syndrome for the first time in a couple of years. Come on down if you'd like. If you're up right now listening to us in San Diego and you're interested, come on down.
Yeah.
Symphony Space. Also, next week, next Thursday, I was going to rip through some new and old stuff. I'd like you to come down, but you can't. It's sold out. Sold out, Symphony Space.
Ooh. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you very much. That's the Thalia Theater. So, President Bush, who started his second term saying, with a vow to end North Korea's nuclear program through a six-nation series of talks, all that's kaput because there was an announcement made yesterday that North Korea has the bomb.
This is a very, very interesting story, Mark. First of all, there have been rumors and speculation about North Korea's nuclear capability for a long, long time. But what fascinates me anyway about what's going on now is that the North Koreans, unlike, for example, the Iranians, who always argue that whatever nuclear work they're doing inside their country is for peaceful means. North Koreans make no such pretense. They say, look, we're making bombs, and we're making bombs because George W. Bush represents a threat to our nationhood.
Yeah, name this tune.
That's the one.
Yeah.
And they pulled out of these talks. Which would lead me to speculate, and this is just speculation on my part, that whatever goes forward from here is going to be totally on the Chinese, because they're really the only ones that the North Koreans will talk to.
Now, the multilateral talks, that was the six-nation talks, and the idea was that the Chinese would use their leverage to get North Korea to sort of buckle and not pursue the arms development.
Yeah, but that was Bush's idea. This is the idea that Bush has been pushing. His thing is, well, the Chinese will exert the leverage, and that way, by the way, if the talks broke down, which they did, then the United States would not bear the primary responsibility. John Kerry, during the last campaign, argued for direct bilateral talks between North Korea and the United States, something that the North Koreans would not certainly have minded doing. But Bush always said, well, if you have these bilateral talks, the six-nation talks, the multilateral talks will fall apart. Well, they didn't have the bilateral talks. The multilaterals fell apart anyway.
So why can't we do bilateral talks now?
Because under these circumstances, the North Koreans are saying we're putting together this bomb. But actually, it could be done because the North Koreans are saying they got this bomb for a very specific set of reasons, and they have to do with sitting down and negotiating with America.
So you're right. So on some level, this is them saying, you want to talk? Let's talk now. Like, because now it's just got to be me, and it's got to be Kim Jong-il and Bush, and that's it. Because now the bomb is there. There's no sort of like disarmament talks, or would they be disarmament talks? Is that what they would be?
It would be disarmament talks. But, the United States, and I hate to say this, but I was thinking about this yesterday in terms of just, other nations and nuclear weaponry. The United States is essentially saying to people, do as I say, not as I do. We have nuclear capability. We've had it for a half century. We are the only people on planet Earth to use it in warfare.
Mm.
Yet, we're the ones telling everybody else who should have it and who should not. there's a real big problem there somewhere in terms of how other countries perceive America, which, of course, we don't care about because we don't really pay any attention to what other countries say or think about it.
Well, that was the interesting thing to me, Riley, was that, like, when they were talking about nuclear proliferation as of late, you know, I just assumed it was maybe a guy in Astoria with a suitcase.
You know, no,
it's like,
no.
It's not like, you know, the idea, like, this is almost old school in the sense of, you know, countries and, you know, having nuclear bombs in my head because, like, after all that fear about dirty bombs, about suitcase bombs, I mean, during the big terrorism scare that led up to the election, which was all about, you know, the election.
Mm.
You know, I just assumed that, you know, right across the street from me somewhere in Astoria was a suitcase that could, you know, take out the city.
Well, in this case, the North Koreans are doing a lot more than suitcases.
Of course.
They weaponized plutonium from 8,000 spent fuel rods, nuclear spent fuel rods,
okay.
Which is how you can. So it's almost like nuclear recycling, the way they describe it in this article.
Right.
And under those circumstances, you're not talking about anything other than making a nuclear weapon. Now the question's got to be, well, you know, for Bush, what do they want? What is it that they
right.
want from America in order to stop this?
It's interesting because their threat, like when he talked about the axis of evil, that was sort of a threat that he's going to go into Iran, that he's going to go into North Korea. Well, now he's not going anywhere within North Korea because now they got a bomb and the stakes are different.
The stakes are extremely high, and make no mistake about it, Mark, the Chinese would stand at the schoolhouse door to stop America from going into North Korea. Remember that North Korea and China share a common border.
Mm.
Does somebody seriously think that the Chinese want to have a nuclear device detonated close to where they are?
No.
Absolutely not.
This is interesting, though, because this brings up sort of some interesting questions about Iraq, is that, like, you know, if... It, you know, they must have known that Iraq had no nuclear weapons, or they wouldn't have gone in to begin with.
Probably not.
I mean, this like sheds light on that whole idea that not only was that intelligence flawed, but it was just crap. I mean, you know, we talk about that here on the air, but something like this is a you know, I never really thought about it that way right off the bat. Is that,
yeah.
You know, if there's nuclear bombs there and you really know they're there, why the hell would you go in there?
Well, think about this real quickly. When it comes to Iran, mm-hmm. which, you know, America is not absolutely certain whether they have nuclear, have actually made bombs. There's still talk about the possibility of surgical military strikes against places where they think the bombs are being made. America doesn't have that luxury with North Korea.
Right.
America doesn't know where they were doing it. Apparently, if they were reprocessing these fuel rods, they've been doing this right under the nose of the world.
Let's hear that sound from the debate when we come back, and we'll talk a little bit more about North Korea and other things, eh?
South Canadian.
Hey, hey. All right.
This is Air America Radio.
Hey, 34 past the hour. Mark Maron here. That's Mark Riley there.
Where?
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm a little under the weather, but we're getting by.
Yeah.
Ray Ray came by today. Ramon came by today with, I don't know, he had some sort of security clearance buttons. You know, Secret Service wears those little weird buttons.
You know, he asked me something, too, that I'm still trying to figure
out. What's that?
If I had Michael Jackson's cell phone.
That's weird.
Very weird.
Yeah, because you might have 10 years ago, but
yeah,
not now.
Not now.
Now it's too weird.
No.
All right, well, here he brought his Karl Rove's bomb pilot for today. 7 a.m., wake up, assume non-threatening human form. 9 a.m., report to new job as deputy chief of staff. Find divisive wedge issue to permanently divide White House staff, then play one side off against the other. Enjoy the show. Funny when you're bored what you do, huh? 11 a.m. to hide the fact that I have no practical experience for this job. Every time someone asks a question about economic or foreign policy, accuse them of playing the politics of personal destruction. Bastards. 1 p.m. sign checks for pundits on the payroll. Note, make sure all their W-2 forms have gone out. Yes, excellent. 2 p.m., meet the president. Tell him he's doing a terrific job and that he can take the afternoon off. No, it's just easier this way, really. It's just easier if you do it. Okay, 3 p.m., quietly congratulate North Korea for announcing that they have nukes. Note, Operation Global Fear is going just as I planned it. Evil man. 5 p.m., make sure Doomsday device is still safely hidden inside my love handles. Wow. Who would have known? Just have those in surgically put in there. He's a creepy, fat little man. So as we were talking about before, multilateral talks have broken down. North Korea admits that it has a nuclear device. It has been working on nuclear devices for years. George Bush promised that he would stop this nuclear proliferation. He didn't. He is a failure. And even in the debates, the first debate, the presidential debate, you know, he fought Kerry on the need for bilateral talks as opposed to multilateral talks because he didn't want to be left holding the bag, yet he still is holding the bag because now it's a completely different game. Let's just hear that segment from the debate, can we, Tim?
Again, I can't tell you how big a mistake I think that is to have bilateral talks with North Korea. It's precisely what Kim Jong-il wants. It'll cause the six-party talks to evaporate. It means that China no longer is involved in convincing, along with us, for Kim Jong-il to get rid of his weapons. It's a big mistake to do that. We must have China's leverage on Kim Jong-il besides ourselves. And if you enter bilateral talks, they'll be happy to walk away from the table.
What does that mean, Riley?
It means that, as you very correctly point out, he did not want to be left holding the bag. He really was expecting the Chinese, and using a whole carrot and stick approach with them that we don't need to get into here, but using the Chinese to try and get the North Koreans to do what the other parties to these six-nation talks, because you're talking about now the U.S., both Koreas, China, Russia, and Japan.
Mm.
The North Koreans have shown that they don't listen to any of them except the Chinese.
Now let's talk about where this puts North Korea geopolitically. You know, what does it mean for North Korea? What has Kim Jong-il done? What is he saying to the world?
Well, what he's saying to the world is we are developing this in defiance of the United States. I mean, he may be doing it in defiance of the rest of the world, but he's specifically aiming this at, in defiance of the United States. And we are prepared to maintain our isolation. Remember now, North Korea is essentially an isolated country, with the exception of their contacts with China.
And their economy is in
their economy is in the turlet.
Yeah.
So you might ask yourself, why would a country whose economy is in the turlet want to develop a nuclear device?
Yes.
Why is that important to Kim Jong-il?
Does it force it's a negotiating tool? Yeah,
exactly.
Okay,
it is a negotiating tool to get some of the things, particularly oil.
Yeah,
they need oil. They need oil to fuel their manufacturing sector.
Okay,
what they make and who they sell it to, I have no idea.
So
but they need it.
Is the leverage then to say okay, we've got these weapons, we'll consider disarming them or not using them or reducing them if you cut us in on the pie? Is that the kind of thing we're talking about?
Well,
here?
if you will make certain concessions. Because remember that the oil thing that went back to 1994 when they made an agreement with the United States, that was for free oil. That wasn't even for discounts. Okay,
yeah.
This was like, okay, you guys can have the oil as long as we are able to verify that you're not building a nuclear bomb. That ended, by the way, in October 2002, and that's when the U.S. Accused the North Koreans of running a uranium enrichment program. And, of course, the Koreans, I said, I guess, look, well, if that's what you think we're doing, I guess that's what we'll do.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to understand that this is an area that requires some very sophisticated diplomacy that I'm not sure, quite frankly, that the Bush administration is capable of.
And what message does this send to other, small countries, just getting started with their own little nuclear plans? I mean, if George Bush is left holding the bag on this, and he said he made a promise that he would move towards disarming North Korea, it hasn't happened. He hasn't stood up. He didn't enter bilateral talks, and multilateral talks have broken down. What's to stop other small, sort of renegade countries from saying, well, the hell with it, if he's not going to, really do anything about it, let's build some of our own.
Well, I mean, you have the Indians and the Pakistanis and many of them. The Israelis
all have
nuclear capability.
Right. And then there's all these new Russian countries, it's not even clear.
The former Soviet Union.
Nuclear materials is floating around in those areas.
Well, yeah, because, the Soviets did have nuclear material. And when they broke off into these separate republics, it's not like the Russians came and collected all their stuff.
Yeah, I did. That's what, that baffles me. I can't even wrap my brain around, you know, how many are just laying around, why none have showed up on eBay. I can't even, you know, I don't even know why or where that stuff is. And obviously it's not my job to know, but you just make these sort of, you just hope that somebody has some tally of that stuff.
Well, yeah, and you hope that, you know, you're not going to see on eBay one day, you know, if you spent fuel reactors for sale to the highest bidder.
That's right. And they have rocket parts. They've had rocket parts on eBay, launching parts. I mean, yep. It's happened before. I mean, maybe the guy that posted that stuff wasn't that smart. But, you know, obviously it's not going to show up on eBay. But who the hell knows what's going to happen in the black market? I mean, that was the big fear around the dirty bombs, around the suitcase bombs, that there was so much nuclear material that had already been made ready, nuclear warhead ready, and it was just floating around.
One of the things that now has to happen is some form of re-engagement with North Korea, either multilateral, bilateral, whatever it takes. Somebody is going to have to step to the North Korea and say, look, you guys got to come back to the table. Because right now they're saying, look, we got the bombs, we're not going back to the talks, period.
Yes.
That's it.
Do you think any of this had to do with that movie? The Matt Stone movie?
Team America.
Team America. Do you think that maybe...
Kim Jong-il got a director's cut, and that was the end of the multilateral talks.
I'm not lonely.
Yeah, that's right. I got bombed. No, I mean, look, it's at a point now where American diplomacy is going to face a very, very strict test. Condoleezza Rice, our new Secretary of State, who's getting all these accolades about the peace process over in the Middle East. I don't know why, but she's getting accolades.
They do this every few years, say there's going to be a ceasefire. But, like, you know, maybe it'll be different with this new guy.
Maybe
Abbas.
It'll be different with the guy Abbas. But, I mean, the net result is Rice comes out smelling like a rose. Well, now she's going to have to step into some thorns.
Yeah.
Because this is not something that, according to the Bush administration's own foreign policy, that it can allow to let stand. You cannot have North Korea with a bomb and not talking.
Well, so this will be her big test in front of the world and the American people. Now, when we come back, health spending in America is currently twice as much as education spending and 3.6 times greater than defense spending.
Ooh.
Get a load of that. 42 past the hour, 43 past the hour, Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com, Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Right over there, it's Morning Sedition. You're listening to Air America Radio again. How's that feel for you? Look at that, there's the facts coming in from the Streisand compound. This is the liberal agenda for today. Here are your marching orders. One, now that North Korea has nuclear weapons, host fundraiser to buy them mood stabilizers. Two, stop and appreciate for a moment the direction and purpose that George Bush's presidency has given your life. Then mail him another envelope of your feces. Oh, poopy joke. Three, oppose Virginia law against kids wearing low-riding pants by cutting the waistband out of your dockers. Four, brace yourself. Every time you fart audibly, tell bystanders, you know, real wind power is non-polluting. Two poopy jokes in one liberal agenda. Five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. I'm so glad Rove got a new job. I was worried that after stealing the election, he might be getting restless. Wake up, sheeple. It's getting worse. Don't drink the Kool-Aid. That's it. So, dude, Mark Riley, I mean.
Hey.
No, you know what? I've gotten rid of most of my dudes. Oh, look, I forgot to bring this up. Oh, do we have some, we don't have any kind of some sweet music, but, you know, we were sort of looking around the blog, and it seems that there's, at MorningSedition.com, it looks like there might be a love connection.
Ooh. Maybe.
It seems that that UU is trying to figure out a trip to Lisbon in June, and she is going to hopefully hook up with Whoopster. Wow.
UU and Whoopster?
This is just...
Wow. I haven't heard this kind of thing since elementary school.
Well, no, I mean, Whoopster wants to hook up with her is the deal. But the thing that's exciting about it, that it's not only is it happening on our little blog, but it's global. It's international. It's an international blog love connection via MorningSedition.com.
Really?
Yeah. And these people have been on the blog for a while. I don't personally remember. It's been a long time since I checked in with the blog. We now have a hands-on blog reader who actually does the reading of the blog for me. But I know that Whoopster's been out there for a long time, probably since day one. Well, congrats. Yeah. Oh, you is Ginger? Oh, okie dokie.
Wait a minute. Yeah. Which, not the same Ginger.
Sure.
The Ginger from England?
Ginger from England who liked us and then was mad at us and then liked us again.
I thought she was married, Ginger from
England. Oh, now there's trouble.
Yeah.
Whoopster Ginger, and that's maybe the name UU. All I know is that now the blog is going to be festering with all kinds of, like, you know, what the hell, man?
You've done it now.
Why can't they respect our privacy? Hey, good luck. I just want to say good luck. Good luck, and I hope it works out in the international love triangle between UU, Whoopster, and Ginger, even though one of them's the same person. I've had some problems with that lately, too, the multi-identity. Who's in charge? I am in charge! Anyways, does this sound fun to you? Go to the blog at morningsedition.com and see if you are chewed up and spit out by one of the hardcore bloggers there. Hey, what is this, Riley? Increased spending for healthcare is eating up about one quarter of the growth in the economy. One quarter of the growth? That's three times the defense budget? What is that? Twice what the nation devotes to education? How is that possible? $1.9 trillion this
How
year.
Is it possible that there's actually been growth in the economy? That's the first thing I want to know.
Yeah, is that a lie?
I'm wondering. Well, you know, Bush.
They're cooking the books.
Yeah. But, I mean, health care, and anybody who's been sick lately knows this already, health care costs are skyrocketing. Now, what ends up happening when these kinds of reports, and this was a report done by researchers at your alma mater, Mark Maron, the Boston University School of Public Health. I mean, I know you didn't go to that school, but you did go to BU.
Yes, and they've tracked me down. What is it, you know, if you ever, like, you know, why don't they, you know what they ought to do? The CIA ought to hire people who work in alumni offices at colleges, because those guys, they can find anybody, anywhere. It's unbelievable, man. I have dodged these people for years, and all of a sudden comes that letter, hey, just checking in and wondering whether or not you're making enough money to give to us. You know, it's like, how'd they find me? It's unbelievable. Anyways, go
ahead.
Well,
this report came out yesterday, and what they're saying is that these costs are continuing to go up and that spending on health care will grow to almost $2 trillion this year alone, an increase of $621 billion from just 5 years ago.
And apparently that's twice the average of spending in Canada, France, Germany, Italy, and Britain, countries where that guarantee health care for their citizens. Wow, you don't think that maybe we could do that here? Maybe that 45 million people unemployed is perhaps uninsured is a bad thing. Maybe that, you know, just, you know, letting the HMOs pilfer everyone's bank accounts is, it's going to get to the point with Social Security and Medicare and everything else that when you become a senior citizen, the pharmaceutical companies is going to have a direct link to your bank account, and so is the HMO. And you no longer make any money at all. You're just given a few dollars for food money.
Well, I think they're just going to, like, put you on an ice floe with like a box of pills, and that'll be the end of that.
Yeah, I don't understand quite how this works and what this implies is that not only is healthcare incredibly expensive here, but where is it? Like, this has got to be adding to the financial strain of all these people, certainly the uninsured people. Apparently, half the bankruptcies in this country, you know, personal bankruptcies revolve around, you know, being tapped out by terminal illness or some sort of progressive disease.
Well, see, this is the thing that a lot of people don't realize. And came out in a previous study. The people who are ending up bankrupt due to health care costs are not people living in poverty. These are people, and in the main, they are not even the uninsured.
Mm-hmm.
The people who are going bankrupt, most of them have some form of health insurance, and they're still going bankrupt.
That's because that's the way they work, this health insurance. Now the HMOs, which is basically a hospital owned by the insurance company, basically, you know, right? An HMO is somebody who dictates treatment.
Yes.
Can say, like, they can hedge their bets. They're just bean counters. They're like, you know, we'll cover you for this, but once you really start dying, then no, we're not going to.
No, sorry.
Yeah, we'll just drain all the money you have out of your accounts, and then when you run out, well, good luck with the dying thing.
But see, the scary part about this, Mark, is that this is what Bush is going to use to push his initiative with regard to health care, which is health savings accounts, the equivalent of privatizing Social Security, only adapted to suit health care.
Right, that's what I'm saying, is that the health savings accounts and the private Social Security accounts will just be connected directly to the pharmaceutical companies and the HMO, and the person who's there wouldn't even have any control over whatsoever.
Well, yeah, and see, the other thing is, and what Bush is trying to push here is the idea that people will be more careful about spending money on health care costs, particularly for routine kinds of services, if it's coming out of their own bank account or their own health savings account, tax sheltered, but still their own account, as opposed to getting it from some health insurance. That's his dream? That's his dream.
So that means that I'm going to be hearing a lot more of this from my friends. Do you think this is something? Look, do you think this is cancer? If I go to the doctor, I'm not going to go if you don't think it's cancer. I'll just ask a few other people because I don't want to spend the money for the checkup. Let's do some projections here, Riley. Apparently, health spending in America is, as we said, currently twice as much as education spending and 3.6 times greater than defense spending. Prescription drug spending will double in 7 years. Health spending per American is expected to increase by 12.2% from 2003 to 2005. From 2000 to 2005, health spending gobbled up 24.1% of the GDP growth. Gross domestic product.
Yeah.
Creating a major obstacle for economic growth. According to the report, U.S. health spending per, and I said this already, but I just want to make sure that we understand, per person is twice the average of such spending in Canada, France, Germany, Italy, and Britain, countries that guarantee health care for all their citizens, which you would think that we, being the richest and most progressive country in the world, supposedly would have something like this. But this is an economy built on sympathy for the corporations, the bottom line is that people die, and we'd like to have all their money taken out of them, but deplete them of all their money by the time they die.
The most telling sentence in this report is as follows. Quote, current U.S. spending should be adequate to cover all Americans. That's telling.
Should be.
It should be. Just like we should be able to feed the world with American farm products. Theoretically, that's doable. Theoretically, with the amounts that are being spent, everyone should be covered. We should start asking ourselves, why isn't everyone covered? And this is another telling statistic that came out of this study. 70% of the healthcare spending done in America is done by only 10% of the sickest Americans.
Huh.
That is a very, very deep and telling. In other words, these are people who are chronically ill and really don't may not have the ability to parse out all these different treatment options. Usually, if you're sick, you take the first thing you do. Whatever your doctor tells you to do, that's what you do.
Wow.
You don't say, well, I'm going to check what option B or option C. I'm sick. I want to get well. Incredible.
And now that we've started this slow slip towards restricting victims' rights, they're about to legislate the first step of that, the first phase of tort reform.
That's right. We got more of this when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Hour. Morning's edition here on Air America Radio. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians of all kinds. Good morning to you. Good morning to you, unemployed insomniac in the Bay Area who is obsessed with me and my narcissism, my self-centeredness. I own it. I'm a self-centered, narcissistic person. I am. Yay! Good morning to the bakers and the candlestick makers and all those people who are working into the night and listening to Morning Sedition on the West Coast. Good morning to you, Mark Riley.
Good morning. I was only hearing you in one ear.
Yeah, I was wondering what the little crisis was there. Good morning, Clutch Larson. Good morning, Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman of New Jersey. Brendan P.W. McDonald, Kayla the Costco Ho at home sick, which is where I should be, at home sick. But I'm okay, man. I'm okay. And Tim, of course, Quiet Tim, we call
him. Quiet Tim.
Tim the quiet one.
You know, Tim the librarian.
They're always the ones that you got to worry about, the quiet ones.
He could be a hitman with a name like Tim the librarian.
Tim the librarian. You never know when it's coming.
Yep.
Usually it starts like this. Shh. Oh, no, it was another hit by Tim the Librarian. Shh, we're trying to read in here.
Ooh. Ooh.
That was right. That
two birds with one stone.
That must have gone through one guy and into the other guy. What are we talking about? What's going on? I'm doing Jerusalem Syndrome this Saturday, day after tomorrow, at the Poway Center for Performing Arts in Poway, California, just outside San Diego. I will be performing a monologue that I wrote a couple of years back. Came out in book form a couple of years back, and I'm excited to bring it back to the stage. So come on down and see that. That should be fun. Symphony Space next Thursday, the 17th. Yeah, 17th. You'll be performing at Symphony Space. If you want to get tickets for that, you can't. It's sold out.
But they can stand out in the street. Aren't they putting speakers outside?
Yes, they're putting speakers outside. You know what? I was in the park the other day. I was in Central Park, and I'm starting to see they're building that Cristo the Gates project.
Yeah,
They're going to be hanging drapery over 26 miles of the park.
He's been trying to do that for like 10, 15 years.
Do you remember the running wall thing? Do you remember that running fence it was called?
Yeah.
I vaguely remembered. It was quite a thing.
Well, I mean, there's always been a lot of controversy about this because some of the people that ran the parks in New York were not real receptive to the idea of his putting all this stuff up. But now the current administration here in New York has apparently decided to go ahead and do it.
There's like 1,100 cats working on the thing.
Yeah.
And I saw the beginning of it where they're putting the post down for the draperies. Of course it's going to be pretty exciting, pretty stunning. It's going to be pretty interesting. It's a very ambitious project. The real question comes is like, you know, why? But
why not?
Exactly. That's the way art works. You know, I'm all for it. I'm a big fan of the act.
Oh, no, I love it. The amazing thing to me is that they are actually offering free guided tours of this thing as it's being constructed.
This is where we're going to put the curtain here.
Yes.
Here's the curtain rod. Yes. This is going to be saffron curtains, I think, is the color. Saffron.
Oh, isn't it pretty?
It's very nice to sit in Central Park. Central Park is a very effective bit of city design. I once read a book on it years ago that when they originally built New York City, they really were concerned that the park had to effectively accommodate the desire for one to be in the country. And it does. I mean, you can walk, you know, like not even 50 feet into Central Park, and it's a completely different world.
Well, you know, before Central Park was actually walled off and designated as a park, people lived in that space. There were squatters. I mean, real, real poor people lived in that space because at that time, New York City effectively ended at Canal Street, which is about 3 miles below Central Park.
Right.
So this was like woodlands, and there were squatters that they literally had to evict to construct Central Park.
Right. I went there with my buddy Dave, who I told you about yesterday, the guy who I've known since second grade.
Yeah.
And he was sitting there. We're sitting there in Central Park. He's like, wow, this is great. Usually I come to New York. All I want to do is run around. I got to go to the museum. I got to go to the gallery. I got to go to the Met. I got to do everything. I got to go see the opera. I got to do this. And now I'm just sitting down. It's like, dude, this is Central Park. You are doing a New York thing. You got to sit in Central Park.
It's a quintessential New York thing, and is equaled only to a park that I don't even know the name of in San Francisco in Noe Valley, which I discovered completely by accident one day when I was going out. I took one of those munis.
It's like up on a hill, right?
Yeah.
I remember.
Yeah, that's the one. There's a school like on the other side of it.
Oh, yes, it's Dolores Park.
I don't know the name of it. I just know it's there, and it's like full of people sitting up reading and enjoying it.
I think it's Dolores Park. It's not quite Noe Valley, but it's right there on Dolores and I know. I used to live right by there.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful park. That's a very small park. I mean, that's
it's a small park.
Baby park.
Yeah, but I mean, that area, it's like everybody decides to use it to, like, hang out. It's a great hang.
It's nice when parks actually function for the people.
Yes.
And then, you know, what else is weird about New York is you have all these little corporate parks, all these little places where they're designated public spaces within corporate buildings.
Yeah.
Those I find a little disconcerting.
Well, those are tax breaks. Those were all done for tax breaks.
Is that true?
Yeah.
You know that one that's, like, just stuck there? Like, I don't even remember where it is. It's in the 50s where you just all of a sudden it's just tucked back. There's just a little waterfall and a few tables.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about. I can't remember the name.
Welcome to the public space. It's like, it's a lot of pressure. It's like, you know, just to sit there at one of the two tables in the fake waterfall, like, this is so relaxing here in the corporate facilitated free space.
Well, see, in order to get like an extra 10 stories on whatever skyscraper they're building, they had to have this little public. That was the trade-off back in the day.
Yeah, but you can't go in there and just start playing some racquetball or something. You can't do it. It's not like that kind of park.
No, you must sit and be absolutely still.
I just had that moment where I was like sitting there and I'm like, wow, this conversation's gone a long time about the parks.
Nothing wrong with parks.
No, it's, you're absolutely right. There's nothing wrong with Prospect Park in Brooklyn.
Oh, Prospect Park is a
gym. That was designed by the same guy who did Central Park, I believe.
Frederick Law Olmsted and Calvert Vaux.
Just, that's what I was going to say. Frederick Law Olmsted and Calvert Vaux. Yeah. But I'm glad you got that information. And that came right out of your head, didn't it, Riley?
No, it came right out of Google.
Everyone's a genius with the Internet.
There you go.
So maybe we'll get Pashman in here in a little while to talk about, you know, what's going on with the restricting victims' rights. Now, let's tip this story a little bit. Apparently, in Congress, they're not going to be able, there's not enough Democrats to stop this. What they're trying to do, if I'm not mistaken, Riley, I'm going to summarize it and then you can actually say what's happening.
Sure.
Is that they are going to make it impossible for class action lawsuits to take place on a state level because they want to move it to the federal courts for a couple reasons, right? Now, when it happens on a state level, that means lawyers can choose whatever state will best, you know, give them the best money, right?
Yeah.
So the reason they want to put in the federal courts is because not only are federal courts backed up a little bit, but federal courts, by and large, are a little more sympathetic to business interests as opposed to individual interests for the most part.
Yes.
Okay. So why don't you, like, say it right?
Well, no, you absolutely did say it right, and you're right in that in Congress, people have looked up and realized that they really don't have the votes to stop this component of Bush's attempt to restrict victims' rights.
Okay.
So what they're saying is, okay, well, we're willing to give ground a little bit on the class action lawsuit issue, which, by the way, is a little bit different approach, for example, than the approach that was employed by Tom Daschle, who just got his butt beat in that last election.
Okay.
This is a Harry Reid production that we have here. And what they're saying in the Senate is, look, we don't have the votes to stop this. And, you know, we've thought about trying to tack on a couple of amendments that would make it easier for victims. Victims, we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not just talking about ordinary people or, you know, drunks that decide they want to file a lawsuit. For victims, they want to make it, you know, they've been trying to tack some amendments on that would make it easier for them, you know, to assert their rights. You know, you do have in this society a right to sue if you feel you've been wronged.
And also, if you feel you've been wronged or hurt or damaged by a, you know, a product or a corporate entity, you should be able to sue them to the point where they buckle. And the truth of the matter is that this restricting victims' rights legislation, that ultimately the slippery slope towards denying people that right, is only going to allow corporations and these manufacturing entities to operate without concern for people's, you know, safety or health.
And you have, in this instance, 10 Democrats who have stood with the Republicans behind what they are calling a compromise bill to restrict victims' rights.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about that, and maybe we can get Pashman in here, who's the health care specialist, as to how this legislation is a slippery slope towards full-on restricting of victims' rights. It's 15 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less, Air America Radio.
Hey, 20 past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Yes, it is.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing okay.
Oh, there you are.
Yeah. I didn't hear myself for a second, but hey.
Yeah. So, look, I go to the therapist today, but I think I'm canceling it, so I got to get this out, and it's not that like it's going to help. This is my dream diary from last night. I'm in this all-white secret human cloning lab underneath the Hollywood sign. I'm wearing hospital scrubs and a mask, and I'm walking around with a cloning specialist and his clone. They speak in unison. It's weird.
Mark, we've taken a wad of your stem cells and created some variations on the Mark Maron archetype.
There's a row of glass pens. There's a 6'8" hulking super Mark. There's a blonde, blue-eyed Mark wearing an Argyle cardigan. There's a black Mark in a Kangol hat named Marcus Garvey Maron. An Asian Mark, a Latino Marco, a three-headed Mark. One head was complaining, one was eating, and one was crying. There's a Mark. There's a Mark that actually likes the Black Crows. There's a couple of female Marks. Word of advice, don't play hard to get. There's a right-wing Mark who bitterly opposes the development of himself. We get to the glowing orange corridor, and they both say,
"Here's our experimental wing."
There's a half Mark, a half lowland gorilla, which was scary. A half Mark, half ficus plant, which would make
Jim Earl, the allergetic, and a half mark, half grasshopper, hopping around in his glass pen. I say, can I just get that one that can fill in for me sometimes so I can just sleep and stuff? And the doctors say,
right this way.
We get to a mark who looks just like me. I say, hey, man, how's it going? I'm the original. He says, you're the original? I'm the original. I said, no, you're in my dream, so I'm the original. He says, no, you're in my dream, so I'm the original. This went on for like 4 hours until the half mark, half rolling gorilla couldn't take it anymore and crushed us both with his giant knuckles. Wow, my brain is so weird. All right, I woke up and my bed was filled with redundancies. That was dedicated to the unemployed insomniac in the Bay Area who thinks I'm narcissistic. I've become obsessed with her, and she's obsessed with me in a negative way. She hates me.
Uh-oh.
She hates me. This is if you're not up to speed on this, we get these messages from this woman who makes note of everything I said, you know, on my show and then tells me why it's narcissistic. Because it's my show! I own it! So we got Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman of New Jersey, sitting in here because he knows the lowdown on the healthcare scam. So, Mark, did you want to say something about this thing?
No, I was just looking at the machinations between the House and Senate on this. This was passed last week in committee by a vote of 13-5. This is a Senate committee.
Okay.
And now they're really just trying to straighten it out on the full Senate, before the full Senate.
Uh-huh.
And they're trying to attach certain amendments to it. Some Democrats are trying to do some Republicans, ironically enough, are trying to do some.
But the bottom line is what they're trying to do is they're trying to make it impossible for class action lawsuits to be taken up on the state level and force them into federal court, primarily because in the federal court is more sympathetic to corporate and business interests, and thus this is the slippery slope towards restricting victims' rights on a broader scale. Is that right, Dan?
Absolutely. Absolutely, Mark. This is really step one of a slippery slope, and they've chosen this issue because it's probably the most benign of the various angles they're trying to restrict victims' rights through. This is the most benign, and it's the one that's a little more towards the center, and that they figured they could get a few Democrats to hop on board. I'll say, in all honesty, it's not totally outlandish. I have mixed feelings about it. Basically, lawyers go around what they call it cherry picking. When there's a class action suit that involves people in all 50 states, lawyers will go around and pick the state that they think will be most friendly to their case and file the suit in that state.
So this is how they put it on the lawyer. This is how the conservative momentum, they basically said, this is just another example of lawyers looking around to make the best money for them.
Exactly.
How do you get so smart at this stuff, Dan Pashman? What did you used to work that gave you this incredible wisdom?
Well, I actually worked with doctors who are very, very in favor of restricting victims' rights. I worked at the Chicago Medical Society for about a year and a half. And was fed their talking points on a near daily basis, so I know it quite well. But it's interesting, for all that I heard from doctors and how important it was to them to get some form of tort reform or restricting victims' rights, as we call it, this first step that the Bush administration has come forward with. You remember back in the campaign, you guys will recall all these speeches Bush made with doctors in white lab coats behind him.
So yeah,
the doctors.
The doctors always wear those white lab coats when they're out of the hospital.
Right.
You see that a lot.
Right. But this piece of legislation that's being discussed right now will not help doctors one iota.
Why is that?
Because class action lawsuits have nothing to do with doctors. Class action lawsuits only have to do with large corporations that do business with thousands and millions of people all over the country.
So, but this does open the door for the broader discussion of if they can get this through, then they're figuring, you know, why not try and, you know, reframe the other stuff so they can put that through.
Absolutely. This is most certainly step one of a process, and they're not going to stop here. The end game is caps. Hard caps on how much money a person can get when they sue.
But this legislation, so you're saying, does affect, although it doesn't affect doctors, it does affect victims, because, right?
Absolutely.
Because we have a guest that's going to come on, Jim Fix, who is an actual Vioxx.
Vioxx victim.
So, explain to me what happened with Vioxx. Now, Vioxx was a medication, a pain-killing medication that came out. They knew there were red flags. They knew there was a problem within, was it Merck?
Merck
developed
yes.
it. And the FDA somewhat knew that there was something wrong with it, too. But they chose not to take it off the market. And now somewhere upwards of 100,000 people could die from this. Is that true?
That is exactly right. They're estimating 138,000 people, as many of that many could die. Many have been sick. heart attacks, strokes. And the biggest kicker of all is that new studies have shown that Vioxx isn't even that effective anyway. The older medications work just as well.
Well, you know, the strange thing about Vioxx is that apparently Merck had commissioned a study about its effects on the cardiovascular system and then killed the study. This is going back to now 2002, saying essentially, well, they're going to find there's other data that they could have gotten that would have given them the information they would have had from this study. But this is a powerful piece of ammunition for people who are suing them over Vioxx, because apparently there were concerns and they shut down the study that would have confirmed those concerns.
And Jim Fix is a part of a class action lawsuit, yes, and
yes.
He will talk to us about his experience with that. And we've also got, what else we got coming up? Just some more great show.
Yeah.
Because this is a great show, isn't it, Mark Rose?
It's a wonderful show.
Thank you, Dan Pashman, for coming in from the other room.
You.
I know that's it's a real stretch, you know, because you're just right over there in the other room.
I'm all out of breath.
All right, we'll pull it back together. Get out of here! What's coming up? We got Jim Fix coming up.
When we got a whole heck of a lot more.
Oh, Morning Edition Radio Theater, dude.
Oh, the radio theater.
Very funny.
I always get the short end of the stick. Not even during Black History Month. But we'll fix that later.
All right, you get more.
This is Air America Radio.
Morning Edition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
The Morning Sedition Radio Theater Company players bring you their production of The Shadow Government.
When last we left Mark Maron, he and a mysterious woman had confronted Condoleezza Rice herself. Now they were laying low at the mystery woman's luxurious penthouse apartment above Washington, D.C.
Snooping around the State Department had turned up fewer results in Ohio's third recount. The more I looked for answers, the more questions I found. Like, who is this mysterious woman? Why did she take me home? Why did she have a picture over the fireplace of G. Gordon Liddy in a dress? And most important of all, if I examined the picture of Liddy for clues, would that make me gay?
Relax, Mark. You look more overworked than Bush's spin doctor.
I'm not relaxing until you spill what the game is, doll. I don't like to operate in the dark.
Are you sure? Let me turn off the light.
Well, I don't like to mix business with pleasure, so I'll try not to enjoy this.
How about this?
Okay, that'll enjoy.
Mark, is that your cell phone?
Put it on simmer, baby. This'll be quick. Talk and talk snappy.
Mark, it's Blanche, your assistant slash secretary
right. Yeah.
Slash receptionist
I know.
Slash pro officer
I know.
Slash
yes.
bookie
I know.
Astrologist.
Cut to the chase,
though. Listen, are you with some mysterious woman?
Why would you think a thing like that?
One of your snitches called and he said he saw you duck into an apartment where a couple of dark, shadowy figures are lurking just outside the door at this very moment.
Yeah. Is this going anywhere?
I just had my hair done and you haven't even said how nice I look.
Blanche, I can't see your hair. You're on the phone.
You never pay attention to me.
I gotta go.
Mark, I painted your office.
Let's see. Where were we? Oh, yeah. You were going to seduce me, and I swore not to enjoy it. Hit the lights. Oh, hey, that's not fun. Wait, you're making it real easy for me not to enjoy this. Ow! Let go! The light came back on, and standing over me was Barbara Boxer in black ninja pajamas. She had one foot pressed down on my neck, hard. As hard as the Senate could have pinned Condoleezza Rice. If the Democrats either had a majority or chose the filibuster, as they're clearly permitted to do under Robert's Rules of Order. Hard. Get me?
Who are you, buddy? And what are you doing here?
Hey, is this a pajama party? I brought my toothbrush.
Bubba?
Hey, Mark. You can let him up, Barbara. He's okay.
So that's your game, is it, sister? You're working for Barbara Boxer.
Oh, I'm doing a lot more than that.
Buddy, it's time we told you what's going on. We are all part of...
Damn it, Blanche.
Who is the mystery woman? Isn't this the third week in a row when we haven't even said what her name is? Don't you find that annoying? And will Mark ever remove the Indiana Jones theme song from his cell phone? For God's sakes, the man is in his 40s. Find out next time when we hear Blanche say...
Do you think my shoes are pretty? I'll hold them up to the phone.
That's next time on... the Shadow Government. And later, join us for the Morning Sedition Radio Theater Company Players production of Dragnet.
Tuesday, 4:55 a.m. I was working the morning shift uptown out of the Air America studio. I was looking for a real lowlife, a real dirtbag, a weaselly, sissy-faced guy named Marin, Mark Marin.
Riley, I'm sitting right here. Put your glasses on. And do you really have to call me weaselly and sissy-faced?
Don't play that pothead bebop for me, mister. Marijuana's the flame, heroin's the fuse, and LSD is the bomb.
Can't we just go to couples counseling?
That's later on Morning's Edition Radio Theater.
Hey, it's 37 past the hour. Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Hey.
That was Morning's Edition Radio Theater. Good times.
Yeah, fun, fun, fun.
I love that thing. Hey, so our guest right now is an actual victim of Vioxx. He started taking Vioxx in 1999 for arthritis pains. He was in excellent health, and since then he's had three strokes and lost the use of his left eye. He's also the fire commissioner of Navarre, Florida. Please welcome Jim Fix to the show. Good morning, Jim.
Hey, Mark and Mark.
Good morning. How you doing? You all right?
I'm trying to get there.
Yeah. So before you started taking Vioxx, you're in pretty good shape. And then how and when did you realize something was wrong and that was the cause?
Well, I can't. We haven't proved it yet about that being a cause, but things started happening. My heart started going into atrial fib, and just a whole bunch of things. I took it for arthritis. It's an excellent arthritis drug.
It can't be an excellent drug, Jim, if all this other stuff has been happening to you.
Well, I know. I understand that.
Oh. But your arthritis is better.
Work.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so when you found out that Vioxx might have caused the health problems, how did your doctors react to that?
Well, we stopped it right away.
Mm-hmm.
There were some words, and we stopped taking it immediately. I was discontinued on the drug.
Now, aren't you? You got to be a little pissed off, I imagine, at Merck.
I was not told by Renee that you guys really use this, and I'm sorry we don't get your show down here.
Oh.
But I can tell you one thing. I would love to have had your show up here in Northwest Florida. I'm pissed because, when you put the faith and trust into a pharmaceutical company,
yeah,
and the FDA, well, that's a joke, and you take the drug for what the doctor prescribes, and the doctor does it in good faith, and it doesn't do what it's supposed to do. Well, hell, if they didn't see what the drug was doing to laboratory mice, what were they doing?
Right.
Yeah. Jim, how was your health before the Vioxx? I mean, before you started experiencing the back pain or the pain that led your doctor to prescribe the Vioxx for you, tell us what your health was like.
Well, it was good. I was, a 30-year Army veteran, and I was doing well, and I started, as we grow older, we get the pains, and I started having some pains. I took the drug, and the pain subsided, and I could do my normal stuff. I could bike, I could swim, and do my my passionate golfing with my friends, and I could walk, skip, jump, run a little bit, and I'm not anymore as fast as I could, and it was healthy. My wife and I could dance, but then things started going downhill.
Jim, how do you feel when you, and I don't know whether you've heard this report, but there's a report out now that Merck, the maker of Vioxx, had actually commissioned a study to check out its effect on the cardiovascular system in 2002, and they killed the study.
Yeah, that really ticks me off, because I have an excellent cardiologist and a whole group of cardiologists up here in Florida, and that makes me mad. One, I'm an advocate for veterans, and I know the drug was given to veterans. And that, that's almost like a drug gate, a water gate.
Yeah.
And that's stupid. Come on. If you know the drug is bad, or all of a sudden you're into it and you find out things aren't going well, at least admit your errors, gather your forces back, and regroup and try to try to change it.
Before you hurt a lot of people. Now you're part of a class action suit against Merck. I mean, what do you expect? I mean, you must want to make this company, you got to want to punish them a bit, right, Jim?
Well, yeah. I don't want to sound like a knight in shining armor. What I want to tell Merck is, basically, I'm a part of the class action suit is to tell Merck to get their stuff together so that nobody else is hurt. You know, I could care less if I get a couple bucks or whatever. My biggest thing is to tell the world and to tell Merck, you know, if you're going to put a drug out there, make sure it's correct and right. You know, I was in narcotics for a while as far as an agent, and you just don't know what drugs do to people unless you've been on the streets and seen it. And here we are with a legal drug, for God's sake, that Mark and their families and friends would take or give to their children or families.
Right.
And I want them to know that, hey, I'm not real pleased with you guys. Give all the pens and paperweights and take all the doctor staff out to lunch and dinner and that, but make sure you put some of that money back in the laboratories and check out your stuff before you put it out in the market.
Jim, I'm assuming that despite what happened with Vioxx, you are still taking prescription drugs now, am I right?
That's right.
Now, are you at all nervous? What's that experience like? I mean, I know if it was me and drugs had caused, or if I thought drugs had caused me, a great number of problems, I'd be very hesitant. Do you question now some of the drugs that you've been asked to take?
Oh, you just hit it right on the spot. Anything that goes into my body, I make sure that I ask the doc, I ask the pharmacist, I refer to the PDR, the physician's desk reference. I'm a big believer now in homeopathic medicine.
But didn't you ask these questions with Vioxx as well? I'm sure you must have. You must have trusted your doctor enough.
Yeah, well, you know, I heard the name, and, you know, just like anybody else, you... in society. At the time, I was just finishing my master's, and I was really, you know, into reading about or doing what I had to do to get my master's, and so I just looked quick. The doctor said it was quick. I didn't read that piece of paper that comes with every drug.
Yeah.
You know, they give you the information thing.
Right.
First of all, my eyes are not good enough to read the micro print.
Right.
You know,
yeah, absolutely, yeah.
You know, it'd take Mark and Mark both to look at one line just to
figure out what it's trying to say.
Yeah.
Sure, sure. Hey, Jim, we're going to take a break. I want to talk to you when we come back. We're talking to Jim Fix. He's a Vioxx victim. He had some horrendous health problems because of taking Vioxx. We're going to talk to him a little bit about what he thinks of current, restricting victims' rights legislation, or as some people like to call it, tort reform, in relation to his case. It's 45 past the hour on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, on the air and online. MorningSedition.com, Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We're on the phone with Jim Fix, who was healthy with some arthritis pains up until he started taking Vioxx, and since then he has had three strokes and lost the use of his left eye. And we're talking about a class action suit that he is involved with against Vioxx. Now, Jim, you mentioned before that your primary intent in this suit with these other people is to bring the message to the people and to hopefully just by putting the message out there that the pharmaceutical industry and the Food and Drug Administration will heed that warning and change their behavior. But don't you think that those expectations are unreasonable in the face of the type of money that these people stand to make with this stuff?
Oh, Yeah, I realize that.
Now, let me ask you another question. Is that why wouldn't you say that, you know, I mean, the other side of this is like, I want to take such a financial chunk out of these bastards that they are hurt, that they are, you know, that they will pay, but not necessarily for your health, which they will do that anyways, but also that they should be made to be punished on an economic level.
Yeah, I can say that. I can truly say that. And but when I first got into the suit, my intent basically was that, you know, is to, hey, make these guys pay. Because I was healthy, I could do things. Why should my insurance company and everything else, you know, pay, you know, for their errors? You know, I was doing just fine getting old and being a happy, healthy guy until this time.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't expect that.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess what I'm asking is that, you know, we talk a lot about new legislation on this show that would restrict somebody like you and your class action suit to take this type of action against a pharmaceutical company and actually get, you know, them to buckle on a financial level. And that, you know, we've been discussing this stuff on the air for a long time, and that, you know, we believe that someone in your position, you know, should certainly have the right to, you know, to try and garner as much money as it would take, not necessarily for you to feel better, but to punish the company.
Okay. Once you win a lawsuit, you know, that should put a flag up. You know, in Florida, we have the three-strike rule about using a weapon and going to jail.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with a tort, you know. Tort, you know, being a wrongful act for which a civil, you know, lawsuit is brought. Well, the wrongful act is putting a product out on the market, and they should have known that. They should have known that there might be risks, and they put it in that little micro dot paper that they give you that nobody hardly can read. And I don't care if you're a non-graduate or a graduate student or a doctoral student.
Yeah.
You know, and if I want them to pay, because they did something to my body, and it affected not only my body, but it affected my wife. You know, I'm down to the point of I get very mad at myself because why did I let myself get into this type of situation? And then I think after talking to friends and colleagues, hey, I shouldn't, I shouldn't be mad at myself. I should be mad at them. And they have more money than the whole World Bank, you know, for God's sake.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'm going to hurt them a little bit. Maybe I can wake them up and smack them and get them a black eye, you know, monetarily. But if they took half their money that they spend, remember I was talking about those paperweights and all those pens and that stuff.
Right.
If you would watch drug representatives, pharmaceutical representatives that go to doctor's offices and see what they do on a daily, weekly basis and multiply that with their wages for the representative, Christ, it's more than it costs the drug.
Yeah, absolutely. That, doing that.
And most of the drugs only cost, you know, a buck or two.
Yeah.
And here's a lady, a retired lady and man, senior citizen, on $352 a month that has to pay $300 to have a quality of life, you know, and they trust in Merrick and the others to bring that quality of life so they can move their joints and move their hands, and then they have to eat cat food or whatever it is or go to the kitchen or ask for Meals on Wheels or something like that. There's something distantly wrong with that. You know, and then talking about the Social Security problems. They ruined the milk you'll probably think I'm too old, but the milk program, they sucked that dry, and that's not a cliche. They sucked that dry, and kids can't get free milk anymore.
Mm.
You know, I get so tired of I do not like going around suing frivolously. I don't like that whatsoever.
But this doesn't sound frivolous.
This is not frivolous.
Right.
I can't see out of my left eye.
No, that's definitely not frivolous.
Huh?
That's definitely not frivolous.
Yeah.
Now, Jim, are you saying then that advertising really did play a role in A, your doctor prescribing Vioxx, and B, you're being comfortable with using it?
No, A, B, I was comfortable in using it because of what I had heard, and even the decent advertising in, like, Time, we get Time magazine and the papers I read. And, you know, it sounded like it was a very safe, excellent drug. My doctor probably, I'm not going to speak for her, okay, but she gave me the drug in good faith. She's an excellent family physician. She knows what she's doing. And she wasn't the only one. You know, my orthopedist made sure that I had a good product that was taking good care of me.
Jim, we're going to come back with you and spend a little more time with you and talk about the some of the details of the lawsuit, and also a little more about the difference between what is frivolous and what isn't. Really appreciate you being here. We're talking to Jim Fix, who is suffering from extreme health problems that may be due to Vioxx, the medication that was... was it recalled? I believe it was recalled.
It was recalled, yeah. Yes.
Okay, so we'll deal with, we'll be talking more with Jim and much more stuff after this. It's Air America Radio.
Air America Radio, don't be stupid!
The hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Morning Sedition. This is Air America Radio. How you doing there, Mark?
I'm doing all right, man.
We are talking to Jim Fix, who was on the phone with us until he started taking Vioxx in 1999 for arthritis pains. He was in excellent health. Since then, he's had three strokes and lost the use of his left eye. He is currently involved in a class action suit against Vioxx. We've been talking to him about pharmaceutical manufacturing companies' responsibilities, and their betrayal of people's trust. And, now, Jim, I want to talk about how, you brought up before when we were talking, you were very aware to not let us characterize or to characterize yourself as somebody who is taking part in a frivolous lawsuit, because this is a just lawsuit in the sense that these guys should be made to pay for the damage they did to you and hundreds of others to people.
That's right.
Now, what I want to know is that, I've been told in the pre-interview, you said that you support George W. Bush's tort reform policy.
Mark, I'm sorry, I can't remember that.
No. Oh. Well,
that's part of the stroke.
Oh, yeah. Well, when you were talking to our booker, you said that you were in favor of the tort reform, and also of, that frivolous lawsuit.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know Bush was the one that had it. I was aware of a couple senators, but I don't believe, we should be running around suing, somebody's dog for me tripping off over the dog. Cup of coffee that spills in my lap while I'm trying to put my makeup on and smoke
sure.
a cigarette. And,
Sure. Those cases, a lot of them get dismissed. Even the ones with the McDonald's and the coffee, that was, appealed and went to a lower court, and it was, the penalties was taken way down. But the problem, Jim, that we're trying to address is that, once they start doing that, once they start putting caps on lawsuits or making it difficult to take on any type of lawsuits, is that a case like yours becomes a compromise as well.
Pardon me. I'm sorry.
It's okay, man.
Yeah, I guess you're right. But I'm right in one thing. In my mind, I see that it's got to stop somewhere. Everybody is so afraid to do something, to make a lawsuit that they need to make a lawsuit. Loss of a limb, loss of their lungs. But they say, why should I? Because, it will just be thrown into the pile. And then here comes Joe Dumbbutt, and he turns around and he sues because he gets a hangnail. My case has merit, very good merit. And the people that judge it and see it, will understand that, will see through that cloud of BS and know that there is a case here.
Well, yeah, that's true. And I think that a lot of the cases you were talking about before, many of those are dismissed. I mean, if they're not valid cases, they are dismissed. And but the fact being is that, you know, if they pass this legislation and put a cap on you know, the limits to which awards can be made, that it wouldn't stop Merck from doing anything. You know, that, you know, if there was a cap on the rewards, you know, Merck could just work your case and the hundreds of other people that were made sick like you to into their bottom line and never have to change your policy at all.
That's true.
Yeah, it's awful.
I agree with you. You know, first of all, I don't support George W. Bush, okay?
Yes.
He's really got my goat, and I'm... No, he pissed me off there. I can say that.
Sure.
Yeah, you can say that.
Yeah, I mean, well, the truth of the matter is that his sympathies are with the pharmaceutical companies.
Understood.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying is I believe in what I was talking to...
Renee, yeah.
Renee.
Or Booker, sure.
Great gal. When I was talking to Renee, I was trying to explain that tort reform needs to happen, one, to give more strength to the strong cases, the real cases, the people, me, you know, other people who have lost childs and all that stuff, and then to the ambulance chasers.
So you're saying that there needs to be a distinction made.
Yeah,
right.
You got it, brother.
Well, I hope that's the way it pans out, Jim, and that they don't just, you know, the cases like yours get lost in the mix with that other stuff, because it seems that this administration certainly cares more about Merck than it does you. And I wish you, you know, a hell of a lot of luck with everything, and then I hope things turn out as best as possible, Jim.
Okay, and I want to say one thing. I was talking to your gal there and your other guy. Hope to get you in the Pensacola area. We're in the Panhandle.
We'll do the best we can to do that. Certainly, we'd love to be down there, you know, passing on the information and entertaining you, Jim.
Well, it's a great program from what I'm listening to.
Okay,
well,
thanks a lot, Jim.
Take care.
Take care, Jim.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Take care. He's a nice guy. He reminds me of my dad.
Yeah.
The way he was saying understood, that's the way my dad says it. Whenever I make a point with my dad, he's like, understood, which is, you know, with him, you know, he's a nice guy. I hope everything works out for him. But that's the interesting thing, Riley, is that, you know, is there a differentiation, you know, between, you know, when we talk about tort reform in the broad sense, are they going to be able to differentiate, you know, between these type of cases?
See, this is what's interesting about what Jim Fix just said. He supports changes that will make it more difficult for people to file what he considers to be nonsense suits, whatever those may be. Now, you know, the McDonald's thing, I don't know whether that was a nonsense suit or not. But the bottom line is his thing is, I don't want my legitimate suit to be lumped in with nonsense. And that's thoroughly understandable. I think on the other hand, though, and I think you may have made him think about this, is what George Bush and what the Congress is trying to push through now, is that really going to have that desired effect? There's no guarantees. When people, first of all, when people have enough money, they can file anything they want.
Sure.
They can file frivolous, nonsense, ridiculous. If they're willing to pay a lawyer to see it through a court,
yeah,
they will get it.
Right.
I give you just one example. Don King, $2.5 billion lawsuit. Somebody's going to tell him he can't do it?
Right, but aren't some of these things just thrown out right away? I mean,
some of them are, but see, when you get to a point where a lawyer will say, you know, you can't win this case, blah, blah, blah. But the lawyer says, well, the litigant says, well, I'll give you X number of dollars as a retainer.
Right.
Okay, fine.
Well, I think, yeah, it's like, you know, I hope that, you know, that they are able to differentiate, because I think that they're using that loophole in that anybody can draw a lawsuit, anybody can,
yeah,
to sort of stifle all of these lawsuits.
And nothing that Bush is talking about changing,
mm-hmm,
nothing that Congress is talking, mm-hmm, about changing, will stop people from filing those kind of lawsuits if they got the money.
Well, you just hope that they're dismissed when they're completely ridiculous.
When they're completely ridiculous, and sometimes they are, sometimes they are not. Sometimes they, you know, they do the whole settlement thing. Now, the other thing is that's interesting about all this is that there's some discussion apparently in the Senate about the idea of sealing settled lawsuits where there may be some imminent danger to other people. In other words, let's say for the sake of argument that Jim settled with Merck about Vioxx. They gave him X number of dollars, but they sealed the record. What happens to all the other people that took the drug?
Right.
That's something that's still at issue, and I think it was the subject of one of the amendments in the Senate that was trying to open that up a little bit.
So that would stifle the class action and make it an individual case thing, and if one guy didn't sue, then, you know, or he doesn't know, they wouldn't reach out to him at all.
Yeah, or right. if an individual sued based on the same criteria as Jim, it wasn't class action.
And other consumers wouldn't be protected.
Exactly.
All right, so from the blog, someone said the majority of frivolous lawsuits are actually launched by corporations. We'll be back with the headline translator. It's 15 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil. In 3 hours or less, Air America Radio.
Past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Looks like we got some people on the phones. We're going to get to them in just a second. Here we go. Let's do it. Sometimes when you read the headlines, Riley, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So I just bought a brand new iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank this baby up and feed it some headlines. Here we go. From the New York Times, North Korea asserts nuclear weapons program rejects talks. Let's put that in the machine. Yes. Here we go. Experts warn poop approaching fan collision imminent. All right. Here's one about the British royal family from Fox News. Charles to marry Camilla. Here we go. Bizarre House of Windsor breeding experiments continue. All right. All right. From the Los Angeles Times, load of Jamaican yams yields 6 tons of pot. All right. Translation. Load of Jamaican yams yields 6 tons of pot. Whoa, man. Our conversation with Jim Fix, who was having severe health problems after a period of taking Vioxx, it looks like it's lit up our phone boards.
It's deep, man. It was a very deep conversation. One of those conversations that you don't, you know, you kind of come out of it and you feel like you've really expended a lot of energy. You know?
No, it was emotional. I felt it in my heart. Gary, listening to XM in Boston. Good morning. What's on your mind about
good
this
morning.
Issue?
Hey, Gary.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, I'm sure you remember the Pinto, right?
Yes,
sure.
Okay. As a result of the class action, they gained access to internal documents, Ford Motor internal documents, that they made the determination that it would be cheaper to fight any possible lawsuits than to fix the problem.
Sure.
And if you cap, if Bush's plan goes through, if you cap punitive damages at $250,000, every corporation will make that determination.
That's absolutely right, Gary. Thanks for your call. Sure, he's absolutely right.
No, he is.
That's the big problem. It's what we've been talking about here. This is the primary problem with tort reform, is that if they get away with this, if they restrict victims' rights to that degree, the Bush administration and the Republican agenda on this particular issue, they will completely allow corporations and manufacturers of hazardous products or unsafe products to just factor in lawsuits into their bottom line, not change their behavior, and go on ruining people's lives, killing people, and destroying the environment.
That's called rewarding bad behavior.
Joanna, listening to Sirius in California, good morning. What's on your mind about this issue?
Mark and Mark.
Hi.
I'm a labor lawyer. I represent injured workers here in California, where we have a delightful Governor Schwarzenegger, core of the insurance industry.
Okay.
And they have recently reformed the workers' comp laws here, reducing workers' benefits by 70%, which the lawyers who represent workers are fighting. But I also have rheumatoid arthritis. I don't know what kind Jim has.
Mm-hmm.
He has rheumatoid or osteo.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit different. But the doctors were giving away in samples Vioxx and Celebrex every time you walked in there. However, when it came time to prescribing, those drugs are not covered by the insurance companies. All the new stuff that they advertised is usually not covered. So I always took the old drugs, because the old drugs were not only covered, but they were tested from when we had a real FDA. So that would be the advice I would give to anybody who's taking drugs. The old drugs are really the better ones.
Yeah, we've been told that these new drugs, many of them are just put out because they can.
Of course. That happened to you with the cold sore.
Oh, yes.
And
boy, she listens.
The other thing, regarding the frivolous lawsuits, the legal system already has mechanisms built in to screen out any frivolous lawsuits. For example, a motion for summary judgment, you can get a case tossed. Or you can have the judge do sanction the other side for bringing a meritless lawsuit, or reduce the amount of the jury award. And here we do have a 250 cap for medical malpractice.
Mm-hmm. Already in California?
Oh, yeah. And try to get a lawyer if you've got a med mal case. It's going to be really hard because nobody wants to touch it. They did it here when the Republicans were in charge. They changed the rules in California. But I understand Bush wants to do it on everything. And one more point.
Yeah.
Dean is going to be the best thing that ever happened to the DNC.
I hope you're right. I believe that to be true.
He's a doctor. He's going to get this country into shape. People are fuming over the health care. And one of the reasons they want to reform tort laws is trial lawyers, which are the lawyers who represent plaintiffs on a contingency basis. We contribute to Democrats all the time.
Bingo.
They're out to get rid of us.
Right. Bingo.
That's what part of this is about. So it's all tied together, and it's all very political, and it's all out to screw the average person. And I wish Jim very well. And I don't want blanket tort reform, though. Because they'll try to do it with everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm not even sure Jim wants it anymore.
Yeah. He's kind of turned around. Joanna, thank you for being such a great caller and a great listener.
Absolutely. See you in San Diego.
Oh, okay. Bye. Wow.
Another Marc Maron fan.
Wow, that's very nice. So we're talking to Kathy on Sirius in Boston. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you? What's
good
on your mind?
How are you?
I'm good.
I love you guys.
Oh, thank you so much. So what's on your mind about this issue?
Well, I'm actually a pharmaceutical rep,
mm-hmm.
And I'm also a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with most of what the last caller just said. I don't know her name, but
Joanna.
I would say that in fairness, I do think that there are good people and bad people in every industry. There are good people in my industry, and there's a lot of people that can't believe I'm a Democrat. I'm a very lonely Democrat on the sales force for sure, but I really do believe what I do improves patients' lives with the drugs that are new drugs that are improvements on the old ones.
What about Merck?
I think it's terrible, and you know, I know a lot of people because of where I live and some of the people that I call on are privy to some of the information about those cases, and it's very, very clear that they knew something was going on a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
They should go down for it. There's no doubt in my mind. I'm for tort reform as Edwards and Kerry had laid out. So I think that the frivolous lawsuits, okay, fine. So then put it to a panel, you know, do a test. It's something I think that they do in the UK. I have no issue with that. But the guy, Jim Fix, was that his name?
Jim Fix.
Yeah, Jim Fix.
I've had this argument with so many people saying everybody is against tort reform until something terrible happens to you. And I've been on both sides of the coin, being a nurse, seeing things that is clear malpractice, that if people knew, they would be suing and should be suing. And I've also seen some frivolous stuff that I don't think is really with merit.
Okay.
I just wanted to not, like, kind of paint. And I know you guys do a great job at sort of looking at all of the angles.
We've got to go, Kathy.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate
Thank
that,
you
though.
Very much.
Thank you.
That's a very nice call. We did some great, very people. This is a very real.
We got a great audience.
Intense issue.
Yeah, it is.
And a lot of informative, informed people listen to our show, Mark Riley. We'll be back with Planet Bush and a bunch of other stuff, right?
Well, a bunch of stuff.
Relatively amount. Well, we can talk Planet Bush and some marriage.
That's right. And remember, you're listening to Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Steve.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So now on the phone, once again is Planet Push correspondent Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Good morning, Mark. God's got a straw, and he's snorting up lines of sin.
Oh, good for God. Good for God.
Rub it on your teeth.
Yep, you got it, buddy. Get a number going. Let's talk about Bush's budget cuts, my friend.
Budget adjustments. Right now, America's like a suit with the sleeves going down past the knuckles. President Bush is just going to shorten that Navy budget blazer to fit us. That's all. Then we can win proudly to the dance at the country club like without looking like some raggedy immigrant working three jobs.
All right. Look, I'll just list off some of the things Bush is cutting from this budget, and you tell me why.
All right.
First, college loans. Tell me how cutting college helps us.
All right, Mark. College is fine. If you're trying to produce a mass audience for All Things Considered.
All right.
College is fine if you're trying to make people believe that man evolved from monkeys.
Yes.
College is fine if you're trying to turn innocent kids into scheming homosexual rent boys and skin-tight latex go-go shorts.
What?
You know what the only really useful college is, Mark?
What's that?
Clown college. Their crazy antics make the world smile. How do they all fit inside that little car?
Okay.
How do they do that?
Look, speaking of clowns, Lawton, why would Bush cut education programs that help poor children? What about that one?
Okay, now that's just compassion, Mark. You educate poor kids, and they start to think they can rise above their God-given station in life.
No, that's
false
awful.
Hope is cruel, Mark. And,
awful.
And cruelty is not what President George W. Two-Terms Mandate Bush is all about.
Oh,
I mean, now, maybe you don't need a battalion of minimum wage workers to handle all of life's little chores for you, but I sure do. My lawn doesn't mow itself. I'm just saying that.
And your food doesn't harvest itself either. Why is Bush cutting farm subsidies? Huh? How about that?
Mark, that one's just a little tough love initiative. You know, nobody has a cushier life than a farmer.
What are you kidding?
Everyone knows that.
Oh my God.
If things start going too well, farmers get soft and lazy and they lay around. Believe me, those folks appreciate it when someone heaps a little hardship
from time to time.
They need structure.
All right, okay. All right, listen to me.
You're wrong.
I saved the worst for last year, Lawton. Bush's new budget is taking huge chunks out of veterans' health care benefits and Medicaid.
That's just appalling.
If someone doesn't take care of sick veterans and poor people, you know what will happen to them, don't you? They'll
die, Mark. They'll die. Oh. Well, sure they will. They'll flop around like catfish on a riverbank.
And that's okay with you? That's okay,
Mark,
with you.
All right, Mark, what happens after those folks die? They get to see Jesus.
Oh, my God.
Now, which would you rather do? Eat pie in the sky at the Lord's glorious mansion? Or hang around down here all sick and ugly, making folks depressed?
Oh.
There's no choice. We're just helping the Lord do his work. And anybody, whoever said everybody's got to live to be 70?
70?
Who made that rule?
Come on, but you're disgusting.
Who made that rule?
You're disgusting. They're cutting everything. You have no compassion whatsoever. I mean, zero. Funding for Amtrak? Amtrak. What is that? You're awful. Awful. What's wrong with you? What happened?
I love trains.
Oh, my God.
Daddy gave me one for Christmas when I was eight. There was a little water tower.
Oh, God.
Stuck there in a little
bridge.
And when it went around the circle, it went,
sad.
Good morning, America. How are you?
Oh, my God.
Don't you know I'm your native.
Oh, let it out, buddy. Oh, I see. You got me again. Let it out. It's okay. It's all right. It's okay, buddy. It's okay.
You know, next he needs to take the budget axe to PBS.
Oh, no.
Why are my hard-earned tax dollars going to pay for bunnies to visit lesbians? Tell me that.
What are you talking about?
Lesbians or rabbits?
I'll buy one.
I don't get it.
Buy one.
I don't get it.
Buy.
God love you.
All right.
Deal with it.
Oh, yeah. Wow, I always fall for that guy's crying. What's wrong with me? The liberal problem I have there. Paul, we're talking, like, before I take that call, Tim, we're talking about, we had Jim Fix on the phone, and he is a guy who is suffering from extreme health problems after a period of taking Vioxx for arthritis. He's had several strokes. He lost his sight in his eye. We talked to him about tort reform, about restricting victims' rights, and that provoked a lot of calls. So that is the topic right now, and we're going to talk to Paul right now, streaming from Connecticut. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning.
Hi, how are you? What's on your mind about this?
Well, I had a point, but I think Lawton converted me.
No,
my point is I take issue when people say, you know, frivolous lawsuits. That's what the courts are for, to determine what's frivolous and what's not frivolous. I mean, you take that McDonald's coffee case on the surface. Everybody says, oh, that's ridiculous. She got burnt, you know, it's her own fault. But what I heard, and I admit I haven't fact-checked it, but what I heard was that McDonald's was cited like 18 times for having their coffee too hot. They were told to cool it down. They ignored that. So, of course, they got to be held responsible for ignoring what they were told.
Coffee should not cause third-degree burns.
You know what? I heard the same thing he's talking about.
Yeah.
I heard that same thing, that they had been warned that this was a problem they knew about.
It wasn't an issue of the spilling. It was an issue of it being 900 degrees.
Exactly, and that's the same thing with Jim Fixes. It's not the fact that he took this medication and he got a stroke. The point is that they knew that there was an issue. They ignored it. They chose to ignore it, and they got to be held responsible.
Exactly. They thought they could get away with it.
Exactly.
And if their tort reform goes through, then they will continue to get away with it and be able to work in the cost of lawsuits into their bottom line, and that's a crime, I think.
So what seems frivolous on the outside, until you hear the facts and the facts in court, you're not going to know what's frivolous and what's not.
Yeah, well, that's what the courts are for. You're absolutely right. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks
for your call. Yeah, I mean, he's absolutely right. I heard that, too. I mean, it wasn't an issue of, like, that lady spilled her coffee. It was, you know, the coffee should not melt plastic. You shouldn't spill coffee on the floor and watch it burn through the ground like acid. Oh, my God, it's creating lava. I think that coffee's too hot. No, it's not. You're just being a wuss. No, look, I burnt my lower lip melted. Ah, you baby. I tell you, you're such a baby. Alex in Manhattan. How are you, Alex?
Hey, Alex.
How many babies would have still been disformed if it wasn't for thalidomide?
That's right.
And another thing, they're trying to resell thalidomide now as assisting people with Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. And it comes out of the same company in England, that it's an American company producing in England, that made the flu vaccine that was defective.
That's a good point. And they were sued out of existence. Is that true? That's why thalidomide is no longer available.
That's right. But they got the patent. They might as well sell it for something else.
Right.
Ooh.
So, and now it's available for other diseases.
Yeah. Well, they're trying to sell it. I know they're marketing it as helping people with Alzheimer's and Parkinson's.
Well, thanks for your call, Alex.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Thanks, Alex.
It's an interesting example. So this was a medication. I'm not even sure what it was initially used for.
So thalidomide was something that was used in the early 1960s. A lot of pregnant women.
Well, that was the issue. We had a guest that was supposed to be on today. I guess it's going to come in next week. Who is a person who had the thalidomide?
He was a thalidomide baby. Yeah,
that's what they call it. Yeah,
this was in the early mid 1960s. For some reason, the year 1964 sticks in my mind.
Got a one man show on off Broadway called FLID.
And by the way, he's not joking about that. I want people to realize you're not kidding when you say this guy actually does have a show.
Oh, no. Yeah, he's very, he brings a certain amount of humor and reflection to his particular birth defect, and he'll be on next week. He had to cancel today. All right, let's take another call. Brendan, listening in Texas on Sirius. How are you, Texas? Brendan?
Hey, Brendan.
Hey, how you guys doing? I'm doing great.
Pretty good, man.
I think thalidomide was prescribed for morning sickness for pregnant women, I believe.
Oh, well, that would explain it. That's all. Yeah, I guess they're having some success with some of these other diseases with that drug. I'm assuming that the people they're treating with Parkinson's and Alzheimer's are not planning on having kids anytime soon.
That's right, yeah.
What's on your mind?
I'm a lawyer in Texas,
mm-hmm.
a tort lawyer, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And what I wanted to do is talk a little bit about what's really going on with tort reform,
mm-hmm.
and talk a little bit about what the real game is here.
Okay, lay it out. Hello?
The battle on these things are lost in publicity, frankly. I think what you see is the media reports two things that bother people. They report lawsuits that are reported in such a way that they appear to be on the fringe of legitimate,
mm-hmm.
When often... when you take a careful look at them, as the previous caller was just talking about, it turns out that they're not on the fringe at all.
Right.
The other thing that they do is they report very, very large damage awards.
Right.
What you never hear about what happens on the post-trial motions or on the appeal.
Right.
A lot of this stuff gets washed away.
Sure.
You don't hear that it gets settled for a lot less than what the jury awarded often.
Right.
You don't hear about the fact that there's lots of defense verdicts.
Right.
Those don't get reported very often.
Yeah, all you hear is like this person suing this person for $1 billion because of a tire.
That's right.
Right.
And so what happens is it creates in the mind of the public who doesn't have the time to really learn about the issue this sort of feeling of crisis.
Now, Brendan, we had a caller that couldn't stay on the line earlier who came up with the idea that the loser in some of these lawsuits ought to pay, and that way, the whole system would work better. You're a lawyer. Would that work?
I think that the main major problem with the way that the system itself polices frivolous lawsuits is this. Judges are lawyers. They are friends of lots of lawyers. And when lawyers stand in front of them and say that, I brought this case, I think it's got some merit, because, they're going to say that. They have a monetary stake in it. Judges are very, very apprehensive about ever sanctioning a lawyer for bringing a groundless lawsuit, which is one of the remedies their previous caller mentioned. And judges are very nervous about ever granting summary judgments and throwing out cases that are actually frivolous. Now, we have something in our system to compensate for that, aside from what the judges do. And this is something that people don't talk about, and that's the settlement process.
Mm-hmm.
And the settlement process, the fact that a case is frivolous, means that there's probably some meeting ground where it's got some sort of little bit of nuisance value to get rid of it. And that's often what happens. The reality is in the real world of tort litigation, the vast majority of cases get settled for some amount of money that's maybe a little more than the defendant wanted to pay and a little less than the plaintiff wanted to pay.
Well, thanks for your call, Greg.
I do have one other comment I want to make, and that's about Texas specifically. And it's about Med-Mal because it relates to what's been being said here, if you don't mind.
No, Brendan, if you can just do it quickly, it'd be great.
Okay, I'll get there quickly. You got to watch the solutions that they offer on tort reform. The example I'll give you in Texas is they got the doctors here to go along with a cap on medical malpractice recoveries on the claim that it would affect people's health care insurance rates and help the doctors be more profitable. They put the caps through $250,000 caps here in Texas.
Did the premiums go down?
They did not. And the doctors all feel betrayed, but they got used by the insurance company and the publicity machine. Get people thinking there's a crisis and then offer a solution that doesn't solve it.
Wow, that's horrible. Thanks a lot for your call.
That's Texas and California, because remember we had a lawyer from California who said they got a $250,000 cap there as well.
They were using the doctors.
Yeah.
Oh, bastards. 47 past the hour, we'll be back with the Liberal Agenda. Thanks for your calls.
Morning Sedition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
One past the hour, going to land this thing. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
We are sitting here at the Morning Sedition headquarters here at the Air America building in New York City.
The Air America building?
Yeah, why not?
Wow.
Can I dream? Soon we're going to have an Air America building from what I hear.
Yeah.
Isn't that the deal?
That is the deal. It's very strange, a very strange way coincidences work, because the office that we're moving to,
yeah,
my daughter used to work in.
Really?
Yes.
At the same office?
At the same office in the same building.
Well, I don't know what it was before.
It was a company called Find SVP.
Oh, I'm looking forward to moving down there, but they're pretty far away from getting anything, getting it all fixed up.
I know, it's
going to
take time.
Yeah, so let's talk about this. The Vatican is apparently very disturbed about divorce and about annulments. Apparently there was just a few annulments in 20 years ago. Now there's thousands.
Well, see, they're really concerned about this inside the United States. What the Pope apparently is speaking to, and this was in a document called Dignitas Connubii, or the Dignity of Marriage.
One of the great Latin documents.
What he's doing is, and the Pope has done this many times with other issues, so
right,
this is not new, but reinforcing existing church law on annulments and divorces. In other words, to stop the rising number of annulments, which allows you, to split with your spouse and you can still take communion in the Catholic Church. That's the real loophole, or not the loophole. That's the real end game.
So that's sort of like still be a validated practicing Catholic, yet still be divorced.
Exactly. You can be divorced and be a good Catholic. The former mayor of New York City, Rudy Giuliani, got an annulment from his first wife.
God, I tell you, you know, it all seems so ridiculous to me. And that's not out of disrespect. I just like, you know, being a guy that was never programmed this way, that was never really sort of, you know, given a faith with any sort of discipline, you know, I'm relieved. But, you know, the problem with it is that as tolerant as I may be, it all sounds ridiculous to me.
All right, well, let me explain to you exactly what an annulment is in the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
It is a declaration by a tribunal or a Catholic Church court, that I didn't even know they had courts, that a marriage never really existed in the eyes of the Church for a number of different reasons. It wasn't consummated, refusal to have children, infidelity, psychological immaturity. And by the way,
I like that one, psychological immaturity. I guess that'd be me.
Yeah, right? Mm. Now, here's the thing that you know, people have to kind of balance here.
Mm.
Yeah, they may have a problem with this rising number of annulments, but each annulment costs about $1,000.
Okay.
So as the numbers go up, you see somebody's coffers are getting full.
Yeah, there's a little money in the annulment game.
Yeah, just a little bit.
But he certainly can't come out and say, please, more people, annul your marriages.
Yeah. But see, it really was a way to do an end around the Catholic Church's rules against divorce and still be a good Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
Some people eventually just say, you know, because there are situations where people try and get annulments and fail, they just go ahead and get divorced anyway and, you know, move to another place. And who knows whether or not you
sneak in.
Yeah. They don't stop you at the door. Hey, are you allowed to take communion?
Yeah, but that's just the thing. No one would stop you. That just must be about the guilt programming in the Catholic model, is that, you know, who's going to stop you from taking communion? It's not like you get a tattoo that says you haven't been annulled. you know what I mean? It's all within your own conscience, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I guess maybe the A on your forehead.
yeah, they don't
annulled!
Carve an A in your... But what you're saying, Mark, is that the American Catholic Church was making a few bucks
well
in that, you know, obviously... Not only was this just a message to practicing Catholics or to sort of kind of strengthen the Catholic marriage, but it was also, I think, a reprimand in a way.
Yeah, and there's also a classist element to this, not just in the United States, but around the world, in that in many cases people have actually hired church lawyers to go through this tribunal process. Well, if you can't afford a church lawyer, what are you going to do?
Mm.
You end up staying married. In some jurisdictions, for example, in Scotland, the annulment process, there are people waiting for 16 years for annulments.
I just don't. To me, it's just baffling because I know.
It is baffling.
My first marriage, I was married in we had a big Jewish ceremony, and apparently you have to get. I think the woman, I'm not even sure that there is a get, which is sort of like the Jewish version of an annulment.
Yeah.
And I never got it. I don't know if my wife got it or not. Yeah, I don't know. You know why? Because I guess it's just not that important to me.
There you go.
How do you like that? There's a liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Here are your marching orders for today. One, now that North Korea has nuclear weapons, host fundraiser to buy them mood stabilizers. Two, stop and appreciate for a moment the direction and purpose that George Bush's presidency has given your life. Then mail him another envelope of your feces. Oh, smelly. Three, protest Virginia law against kids wearing low-riding pants by cutting the waistband out of your dockers. Do it now! Four, every time you fart audibly, tell bystanders, you know, real wind power is non-polluting. Fart jokey. All right, five, today's phrase, just drop it in the conversation. I'm so glad Rove got a new job. I was worried that after stealing the election, he might be getting restless. Wake up, sheeple. It's getting worse. Don't drink the Kool-Aid. What's going on tomorrow, man?
Tomorrow, we're going to have a very interesting discussion about activism with two of our favorite authors, Thomas Frank and Joseph Heath.
Oh, that'll be good. Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be real interesting. Thomas Frank, What's the Matter with Kansas? Joseph Heath, co-authored Nation of Rebels. We're going to enjoy it. Have a good one, Marin.
You too.